Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Cinematic Universe, a podcast all about comic book movies and TV. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and joining me are...
James Hunt.
And Reese Williamson.
We're throwing it back today, guys. We are talking about a movie. We're going to be discussing... David Yaroveski's 2019 movie, Brightburn. But before any of that... I'd like you guys to tell me what's going on in the world of comics right now. What am I missing out on? What should I be getting excited about? Is there anything happening in the superhero world that's got people excited? What's happening with all that X-Men stuff? That's still going on?
Yeah, it's still going on. It's kind of winding down a bit because Jonathan Hickman left when... basically, there was a plan to sort of blow up that status quo. And everyone went... we're still kind of having fun with it. So he went, okay, cool. You guys keep doing your thing. I'm going to go like write Spider-Man or something. So he's gone now.
He's writing Spider-Man?
He's not writing. There's a rumor, I think, that he might be writing Spider-Man at some point.
Because you just said, what you said was, I'll go and write Spider-Man. So forgive me.
Yeah. Forgive. I think what he's doing is his Substack, like open source world or whatever it is.
That's all.
Three Moons, Three Worlds, something like that.
Everyone loves Substack, and it's making money for everybody, and it's a real long-term thing. Am I correct?
Just burning off venture capital.
No. But I swear this Hickman stuff was happening last time we talked comics that he was off. So was it just been treading water for the past year, or is anything?
It's not treading water, but the Krakoa status quo of the X-Men living on a sentient island and they can come back to life is.
Still is the
ongoing premise of the thing now. But it's still pretty good. It's not bad. Marvel generally is doing a lot of good stuff, so I'm pleased.
What do you think the X-Men pitch could possibly be following this? You know, what as an X-Men, I mean, are you still reading any X-Men comics now?
Lots of them, yeah.
Good. So, okay. If this is coming to an end, the status quo, you've enjoyed this. What as an X-Men fan, what would you like to see follow this?
I'm the wrong person to ask because my thing is always just do the classic X-Men. I want to see them like they were in the 90s, where there are about 14 X-Men and they live in the mansion and they are superheroes. Like I like the Krakoa stuff. I didn't like the endangered species stuff they did before that. I didn't like the no more mutant stuff they did before that. So, you know, I want to see the classic setup. I think whatever happens next will be purely dictated by what happens to the X-Men in the movies. And, you know, that might mean they might do the Krakoa stuff. I don't know.
Okay, so what about outside of X-Men? Is there anything bigger happening at Marvel? Is it all leading in any direction, or are there any stories that are taking off right now?
They are building events around Kang.
Okay, makes sense.
Not surprisingly, but they're right at the start of that, so it's going to be a while, I think, before it pays off in any way.
Jason Aaron, you know, because Joe, you'll know this, like for. I don't know for how long, but you know, the Avengers comic and line is kind of has been the spine of the MCU of the universe for ages, and usually the main writer of that is kind of your you're sort of your auteur for the big story. And Jason Aaron, who's been writing Avengers for a long time now, he's finishing up his run, right? And there's an, there's kind of the new hot writer coming in, Jed McKay.
Yeah, he's been writing Black Widow, Black Cat, sorry, which has been really good fun. Mm. So I'm going to read his Avengers book, definitely.
I don't know about you, but sometimes when they, you know, because sometimes they rename the comic and, you know, fine. Sometimes they, you know, they often don't, but the logo, they just sort of rejig it a bit. And I saw the cover for the new Avengers comic, you know, because they always relaunch for the number one. And I just looked at it and I just sort of looked at it and went, no, something's weird about that. And the Avengers being like centrally located above the word Avengers, I just really kind of freaked me out for a second. I don't know if you had similar font freakouts.
Well, no, that logo is, I think, the late 80s logo.
Ah, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, cool. it's a reuse of that logo, which I don't know why they've gone back to that one, but maybe there'll be a story reason.
There will be a story reason. It's just
what I mean is perhaps it signifies a return to a more classic style of Avengers comic.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
But it's a good lineup. It's quite MCU influenced. Mm. Do we care who's on it? Do we want to know?
I don't. If that's fine. What about like who are there any breakout books that are like B, C tier characters that can be recommended?
Black
Cat, maybe, actually.
Yeah, Black Cat's comic has been really good for the last like 2 and a bit years. Mm. In a way that I think will probably make Sony go like, oh, we should do a Black Cat movie finally.
It's wild that they've been going to a lot of these other characters before her, to be honest.
Yeah, because that take on the character has been very good.
What is the take?
The take is that it's just the kind of classic Catwoman setup, really, is that she's a thief who is sometimes nice.
Okay.
But it's the relationships around her that they've done good stuff with, and especially introducing Iron Cat, who is great.
Oh.
It's giving her own Iron Man armor, which has little cat ears. It's very cool.
That sounds awesome. Googling Iron Cat.
But yeah, so that's been really good. The new Fantastic Four book by Ryan North is excellent. I would recommend anyone goes to get that because that is the best that book has been in years. Certainly post Hickman. I've just started reading the new Iron Man book as well, Invincible Iron Man. That seems fun too. Like there's only 2 issues, so I can't say for sure. But
who's writing that?
Who's writing it? Jerry Duggan, who was off X-Men.
Hmm.
Daredevil by Chip Starsky is great. So, you know, Marvel's ongoings are better than they've been in a long time.
Hmm.
If they can kind of wrap that into a satisfying meta arc like they did with Secret Wars, I'll be very happy.
I'd love to know how Feige is involved with the, you know, not the day-to-day, right, but the month-to-month Marvel Comics direction. You know, because he, a few years ago, they promoted him to some sort of a, you know, Marvel, you know, he
creative
is, yeah,
director or whatever, yeah.
And that...
Well, it was, I think it was as much of a promotion, it was not making him have to report to White Perlmutter anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's you're probably right, but I just wonder because again, I've always said, I think I stole this from House of Astonish, but you know that the comics is such a great R&D machine for movies, and I think if again Feige, a busy guy, right? But you know, one wonders if he pops into some of those creative retreats every month or every quarter, he's, you know, I just wonder whether that's useful for his more important, you know, day job of running the movie studio, or whether he can use a bit of that. Because again, I think that's a big difference between, and I've always said this, the different, you know, the Marvel and DC cinematic stuff in the last 15 years is, it's, I don't think it's a coincidence that Marvel have mined, really, and I really mean like mined, like, you know, mined the comic stuff and the recent comic stuff way, just way more than DC have. And that's not out of some like moralistic, like, oh, well, we want to reward our recent comics creators or it's good stuff. It's like, no, this is tested and you can, you know, we can cut these pages out and stick them on a whiteboard. And actually we have a storyboard for like an action sequence. And you can see the movie in front of you if you will use this raw material. And I think DC and hopefully James Gunn and Safran are going to do a bit of that. Anyway,
my guess is Kevin Feige, dials into a Zoom once a quarter and goes, hey guys, it'd be really good if you could do something around this character. We're going to do this, so it would be helpful if you could start bedding in these things. That's about it.
I mean, it's interesting that the Falcon has become Captain America again in the comics, and they're doing stuff with Kang. So there's definitely some kind of synergy there. In a way, it's a bit like, oh, actually, the movies are leading the comics at the moment.
That's how it's always. I mean, that's mostly how it's always been.
That's how it should have been. It's not how it's always been. Like when the X-Men movie came out back in the day, the comics were impenetrable nonsense, even to people who've been reading them for a long time.
But did they wear black for a bit?
No, what they did was they changed the logo to something resembling the movie logo for 2 months.
Great, yeah.
Well, they did get to the black. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like a couple of years later.
Yeah.
But that was a real missed opportunity.
For me, it feels like the movie people make their own decisions, and if they want to pluck comic shit, then they do that themselves. And that the comics people, they're always, you know, following on from the movie people, and actually when Feige announces stuff, the comics people are like, we should do Kang in 18 months because he just announced it on stage. I think that's the order in which it happens.
Yeah,
it's not Feige going, hey, you should do a Kang comic.
Yeah. Kang is going to be on people's radar. Yeah,
we want to sell 5% more Avengers comics. Let's make Kang the bad guy because they're doing the other guys.
Well, like the way that they're currently putting out a mini series called Secret Invasion, which is about Skrulls hiding on Earth. It's not the original Secret Invasion. It's not connected to that. It's just similar premise because they know the TV show is due.
So. If I would describe the relationship between like the comics publishing ideas and the movies, I'd describe it as like thirsty. You know, we won't just be like a Skrull comic. It'll be called the name of the show that they're doing. That will be its name, and it's probably got Nick Fury in it, and it'll be Skrulls because we will sell more comics because nobody reads comics. Sorry, James.
Okay, what about over at DC then? Is anything interesting happening there? I know, James, you don't read as much DC, but...
Superman has been reset to his standard status quo, I think.
Okay.
They made it... For a while, his identity was public, and they've undone that.
Is he hearing weird voices in the middle of the night? And is he maybe...
I'm trying to think what else is going on.
Well, do you want to talk? I haven't read any of these comics in years, but I did read like Bleeding Cool. Did you read any of that Bleeding Cool stuff last weekend or last week?
Go on.
So they, I feel like Rich Johnson has been for years. I think Dan DiDio has emailed him basically and said, "Here's what I was going to do. Here's what we were going to do." And so last weekend, it was one of those things where it's like 15 articles, but each article actually has half a paragraph of something in it, and it's just stretched out. But anyway, you know, each their own, and you know, more power to Rich Johnson. But it basically was laying out what the story was going to be of
5G. Oh, 5G, yeah, of course.
And it's, I have to say, it sounded cool. It sounded cool, and it was the story of how Batman and Superman were going to be sort of aged up and replaced. And the kind of the main Batman and Supermans in the comics were going to be it's going to be John Kent and Jace Fox, I think, yes.
Yeah.
And then they were going to do a kind of a Kingdom Come storyline with older Superman and Batman. They were going to
they were going to turn against their you know, their younger versions, and Kryptonite was involved, and the Justice League died, and all this stuff that you can kind of see in current DC. You know, they can see the tendrils. You can see some of the similar ideas that are, that have been used, but without the, you know, without the big picture, big storyline that, again, I think sounded quite exciting. You know, because it's that balance with comics always of new, but with new, but we'll probably reset all this, and new characters, but they're the old characters. How do you balance that? How do you balance these publishing stories, you know, continuous stories that have been around for? When's Action Comics one? What is it? It's like
38, was it?
Yeah, so you know, not 100 years, but 90 years. You know, that's just an insane amount of time for a single contained, you know, character story. How do you make?
I mean, the way they do it is they just keep having cut off points, don't they? But
yeah, that's how DC do it. Marvel low key, kind of not low key. Marvel low key, sort of just haven't resisted that. I think admirably. And they just they modernize, and they, you know, they have the Ultimate Universe and stuff like that.
Cool. Okay, that was a nice little comics check in. I'm not reading anything, guys. Does that surprise you? I don't mean any comics. I mean anything.
Just anything. <yeah. laughs> I'm unsurprised by that.
What level are we all on Marvel Snap?
What level?
Yeah.
Collection level. All right, let me check. Let me just check in so that I can brag. / upset everyone with how much I must be playing.
Are you still going, Reese? Have you checked back in?
No.
my collection level is 2,217.
Holy shit. I think I'm like 2,100. I've not got it open. Although, James.
Go on.
I do have my cool Vision.
You do, yeah, I saw that earlier.
I've got a variant Vision, you guys, and he's the black. He's the white Vision variant, and ooh, then I've got the ink flare with like sparkles. Oh, cool!
It is very.
And when
cool.
I say cool, obviously it's the opposite of that. But I'm happy.
I'm excited that there's a Dazzler card out at the moment, just been added.
Wow, that's huge. That's big. That's big for you. Yeah.
It's a good game. It's a good game.
Yeah, no, I just when I played it for that week, what a week it was, and it was a really fun game. Although I still was never quite sure if I was playing a robot or if I was playing a real person. But again, hey, listen, welcome to 2023. That's probably an issue everywhere. you go get your colon shirt. You don't know what's going up there. You know what I'm saying, guys? You know what I'm saying? You don't know what you're talking about anymore. I'd sort of started that riff. I didn't really know where it was going, and it worked. Bad.
You couldn't tell.
I was trying to think of like what's the most sort of silly example of a job you'd go to and it might be a robot. But I think colonoscopy actually isn't that silly because it's, you know, it's all robot arm. Anyway, I'm just gonna stop.
Shall we talk about the film?
Oh sure, yeah.
So we thought we'd go old school this week. We were like, well, there's not any movies or TV shows in Jan. What should we talk about? Throwing some more ideas around. Like, oh, should we see if there's a movie we could talk about? And James, I think you mentioned Brightburn recently in relation to a James Gunn bit of news, of which obviously there's been lots recently. And so we landed on Brightburn, which is, of course, produced by James Gunn. You can always tell that James Gunn has produced something when his partner is in the cast.
Well, Michael Rooker, you mean?
It's written by Brian Gunn and Mark Gunn, who... I've not turned their Wikipedia names purple yet, so I'm just going to assume are...
Minor members of the Gunn family.
Yeah, they're not
Sean Gunn,
Kraglin, and they're not head of DC, but they do have Gunn as a surname. So written by Brian and Mark Gunn, and directed by David Yaroveski, who I don't think I know anything about. Just looking at his
least of all how to pronounce his surname.
No, he directed a movie called The Hive and something called Nightbooks. That was that Kristen Ritter goth Netflix thing.
I was trying to think quickly of what those titles could be if they were in a sort of a Brightburn cinematic universe, right? What would the Hive? I guess that would be the Wasp, right? What if the Wasp was evil?
The poster for the Hive says Nerdist presents the Hive.
Oh no.
Nerdist presents, eh?
He also directed the Guardians of the Galaxy Inferno music video.
Was that the thing at the end of 2 with
it was the Hasselhoff thing, yeah. Okay. Huh. Yeah. Hated it. But anyway, here we are with Brightburn, which is for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's released in 2019. Stars Elizabeth Banks, who you will know for being Elizabeth Banks, David Denman, who I think is probably best known for being the Jim love rival on The Office, right?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was the thing that was jumping to my eye. Oh, apparently, he was in Mayor of Easttown, which I haven't seen.
I think he's this. Hey, spoiler alert! I think he does. I think he's the killer in that.
Oh, wait, that's a big spoiler.
It came out last year. Come on! I think he's the killer. Yeah, I think he might be the killer. Good show.
Good show. Maybe know who did it at the end of it.
Statute of limitations is concluded. Okay.
No, I'm amused by great show that I think I remember who it was who did it.
It is very ephemeral. Okay. I know that I watched it and I loved it. I couldn't tell you. Her name was Mare.
Yeah.
And she lived in Easttown. And she was a Philly PD. She ate a cheesesteak. Good show.
Anyway, let's get back to the context of the movie.
The guy
from The Office, Badger from Breaking Bad, the girl from Search Party. No, not that one. The other one. And it is a Superman riff. It is what if Superman but evil, which I think has been done before in comics a lot. But this movie definitely takes it down the slasher movie kind of avenue pretty quickly. So, Brightburn, guys, what were your thoughts? First of all, did you like it? And then we can get into hopefully some kind of like Superman adjacent chat.
I thought, I saw this in the cinema and it was one of those movies where I just like went, well, you know, I've got a free evening. It's on at the cinema. I'll go and check it out. Why not?
You probably said, do we want to do an episode on it? And the response was, maybe. And then no one else saw it.
Well, I mean, it didn't exactly get a massive release or anything, did it? But, so at the time I enjoyed it, I thought, yeah, that's basically if someone says to you Superman, but it's a kind of slasher horror movie, you go, well, yeah, that's exactly the script you can produce. To the point where I would go so far as to say, if you imagine what that film is, like Superman's origin, but horror, you will imagine the exact movie that they made. But I thought it was fine. You know, it's short. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Sure. There are some pacing issues.
Reese, you laugh. It's one of the reasons we chose it.
Yeah, there are some pacing issues, maybe, but only because everything that happens is fairly predictable. And if you feel like it's not going quickly enough, it's because you already know exactly what's going to happen from about the first 3 minutes of the movie.
I liked it less. Because I think it should be better. The premise is fun. Because I think I got this in my head confused with a couple of other movies. So
go on.
I think one of them definitely was. I thought it was found footage. I will say, you know.
So you confused it with Chronicle.
Yeah,
and which is I think a very fair comparison to make.
And then maybe Insidious, the little boy who's evil. Like, I think the posters just threw me off a bit. So I knew it was a Superman riff, but once it starts and it, like, it's a real, you know, it's in Kansas, right? And there's a meteor, and you know, and then once I figured out that, you know, that it is Superman as a kid. And then something goes wrong in the sort of Jor-El, his spaceship thing, you know, in the comics, like that's the kind of jump off point. And then it's a slasher movie. And then it just, I think the kills are not interesting enough. I'd say once it becomes that, it's not a good version of that. And I think it's fairly poor. From Wikipedia, it sounds like Elizabeth Banks, who plays Superman's mum, her performance was, you know, noted as good in the mixed reviews.
She has that charisma that means everything. Every time she's on screen, you're like, oh, that's good.
I think that's the premise, but I didn't feel that watching this, especially in the last, okay. You know, it gets final girly and she's the final girl. I thought she was kind of awful, actually. It was all
really
kind of, yeah, I kind of did.
Wow. Okay.
And so, you know, in a slasher movie, the final girl stuff, you need to get right. And I think the kills, you need to be creative enough with. And for me, I enjoyed the first half an hour when I was kind of trying to figure out what the movie was, and then the last hour when it's those bits, and I think they're executed on kind of poorly, I lost interest, if I'm honest. And I never quite understood. Well, I think it's a missed beat because the movie does not try and explain why this kid goes wrong. You know, it doesn't. It's, there's some very vague allusions, maybe, you know, but you know, a movie that's more of a satire on what if Superman landed, what if Superman landed.
Hang on, Reese.
Yeah,
you dropped out for like five seconds. Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, start from the movie does not try to explain.
The movie does not try to explain enough for me why this Superman went bad. And you know, I think there is, for me, the movie I wanted to see and the movie that's interesting here, which you can still do with the slasher stuff, is okay, what if, and I'm sure that this is the premise of the script, is like, okay, let's do a satire on Superman lands in like modern Kansas today, and Kansas today isn't like Kansas was in the 1930s when they conceived of Superman. And that turns Superman bad, and I think there's an idea there. But
that's actually a really good premise. It's like, the if the heartland of America has gone rotten, what would that do?
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
I think that's in here a bit. There's the gun bit, which we can talk about. There's that scene, which I do think is, that's what that scene is doing. It's trying to draw a line between the boy and gun culture in Red State America. I think there's some stuff. There's that scene between him and his dad when they're talking about sexuality, which I thought, I don't know. I think that's in there too, but it's barely. It's not in there enough. And that's the movie I thought we were going to get from the first half hour, but that's not the movie. And again, the movie that it is, I think, is kind of poorly executed. And so for me, it's two stars, I think. Yes.
So I think I probably sit a little bit between the two of you in that I was frustrated that it wasn't the movie that I wanted it to be from a pure superhero lens. Like, I would have loved this to have been, you know, especially when they're like doing the aesthetic stuff early on, and like it does feel like a bit of a Man of Steel riff, specifically with the score that they've got, and the kind of the shots over the wheat fields, and
or the shot of the swing, right? That's like such a Man of Steel shot.
Yeah, and so I do think it, you know, it has potential to be a much more interesting film than it ends up being. In that regard, and yeah, I totally agree. I think like a modern riff on what would landing in the American heartland today do to a kid who's you know, hopefully going to be a hero.
I was going to say, I think there's also something in that as a, you know, what if a son of a billionaire today was orphaned in modern America, you know, and you do a Batman riff and it goes in the same kind of direction. There's something in the idea here of like, you take these origins, you modernize them, and they all go wrong because of our society. I think that's the something
you could,
there.
You could call it the Dark Universe.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
But I think basically I agree with you on that count. I think it works slightly better than you do as a kind of like a just a straight, like, I thought there were some gnarly moments. I thought Badger's face flapping open and the glass going into the eye, and there was, and you know, burning through his dad's skull. And I think what the film does a really good job with is making the kid in the costume really creepy, and actually like that between the mask and the red eyes and the logo, like a decent amount of iconography very quickly. The other thing that I think the film does well, which, you know, massive spoiler alert, but this is just a spoiler-filled discussion. The ending of the movie is, I think, the right choice. He should not be defeated by his mum. Like, I think the whole point is, like, if there was an evil Superman, he would prevail in the way that a good Superman does, right? Mm-hmm. That should be the way it unfolds.
Just speaking about the iconography of that, I thought it was really good fun that his the way that he is like announced to the world in a way is by a plane crashing on his house, which is like, it's like the inverse of Superman, who is traditionally saving planes from crashing.
Yeah, that is nice.
Yeah.
I thought the kid was fine. I think it works. I think it works better as like a functional slasher movie with a creepy kid who is actually creepy. I think the script is not great. And that was the thing that I just kept tripping over, like some of the dialogue, the ways that the characters acted, certainly the parents, they had to, like, and I think it, you know, a lot of it comes down to the pace the movie was going, and I'm sure that, you know, as you say, there was probably different stuff in original drafts of the script, because yeah, I agree, the gun scene is an interesting thread that isn't really picked up. And the sexual stuff that's in there, but the, yeah, it doesn't, from a scene-to-scene basis, the way that the parents are behaving sometimes seems absolutely insane and kind of, like, inconsistent with how you've seen them act a scene before. And some of the dialogue's really rough. And, yeah, I agree, the pacing, like, you feel like you're absolutely racing through certain sequences. And then the sequence where Badger gets killed, would just always be Badger, it really long and drawn out. And then, and even like in the last moment, you're like, oh, so he's dead. Oh, no, he's not dead. Oh, so what's going to be the button on this scene? Oh, there isn't really one. Okay. But you could have shown that without extending the scene another 20 seconds. I think it does a good job of almost like doing what it says in the tin, but as superhero nerds, I think we're probably sat here going, ah, wouldn't it be great if it explored this, 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 and this? And I was kind of like in the first act going like, oh, I kind of want more of these parallels to be like direct parallels to Superman.
I think it's hurt a bit by the boys as well. Like, I don't know if I'm trying to think if the boys aired before or after this, but probably this first season pretty close, maybe comes after. And all of that kind of cinematic, like gory displays of these powers, you just get more of on the boys, and obviously it's more comedic, but perhaps that stuff was just a bit more shocking in 2019. you know, and it doesn't feel as shocking.
I don't think it's going for shocking. I don't think it's going for like, oh, it's shocking that this kid with superpowers is killing people, because you know, the other film that I was comparing it to was Chronicle, which you know, you mentioned, and you know, I think is unavoidable, and I think is a better film than this, certainly through our superhero lens, and because it's doing specific stuff with the found footage genre and specific stuff with the superhero genre, whereas I think this is ultimately more interested in being a horror movie. But yeah, I like
some Looper vibes in there. I thought of Looper,
which, yeah,
you know, the back half of Looper is, you know, it's the farm element and the superpowered boy, and you know, that sort of, you put a little like brunette boy with like a fringe, and you have him doing, you know, giving an intense look, and you know, you've also got the Omen in there, I guess.
I guess this film plays its hand very early, though, that like this fucking needs to die. You know, like I didn't feel the conflict of like Looper of like, no. Should you kill baby Hitler? Like,
I did. I thought
this kid's quite sweet. His mom seems to like him. He's nice. Whereas you watch this, and the moment that you see him behind the curtain in that little girl's room, you're like, no, murder him. Put him out of his misery.
I thought it was fun that like he's there's that sequence in class where they're talking about wasps and bees and how wasps are like predators, and just from that little sequence you're like, okay, he's a wasp, everyone else is a bee, like this is bad news, and probably you need to call the FBI and be like, hey, an alien crashed in our garden. And we raised it. Can you maybe fix that?
Now he's an incel. What the?
Yeah, now he's turned into an incel.
Well, it's gonna, you know, I think back to the like modern satire stuff or commentary stuff. Like again, that's in there. Well, I'm not even sure that wasn't there maybe in 2019, but I think that could be in there today. You know, there's that stuff when he's saying, "I'm superior," right? Or yes, I'm different.
Yeah.
So like, there's something in there of. Although I guess it doesn't have this sort of crushing insecurity of the quote unquote, you know, incel movement. There's something there. There's something there, like, you know, young entitled men in America, right? And again,
the movement. I mean, one of the threads about the film, right, is like how raising a boy can be weird because they, you know, they turn into a teenager and suddenly they're like sex mad and violent.
Sure.
And like that was kind of a little thread in the movie. I thought it was really funny how his dad takes him into the forest to like have a man-to-man chat, and he's like, oh, you know, sometimes you'll get urges and it's okay to act on them. I'm like, no, be more specific, because his urges are not good at the moment.
And also the specifics of that scene as well of, oh, what's that? You've asked me one question too much. Let's shoot something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Act on it now. Like, what? No? What do you mean act on? What are you talking about? I know what I was talking about.
Yeah, right.
What are you talking about? Yeah, we move on. We move on. By the way, I know that I found you inside of a spaceship.
Like, yeah.
Like, he, you know, he knows. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, he knows who the kid is at that point, and he should be more concerned.
So, Reese, I thought you made a good point on,
really?
on the kid, and that, you know, the movie doesn't really try and explain why he's turning bad. No. Like you say, I think you can make a puberty metaphor. That the like textual answer in the movie is the ship is speaking to him, and so in this scenario, presumably he was sent to Earth as a weapon. So like it's preordained that he will be bad rather than anything turning him bad. I kind of think that's a little bit less interesting than the other route, but yeah. that is what it is. But I wanted to ask you guys about Superman and how kind of like historically in the storytelling with Superman, how much of it, because Superman is kind of a little bit unique amongst like A-list superheroes, at least, that he is from another planet and he does arrive here and then choose to do good rather than, you know, being a human who has to decide how to use their power and responsibility, etc. There's a quote about that somewhere. But yeah, with Superman, like how much of it is historically that he chooses to be good versus he's inherently good? Like, is there ever any kind of nature nurture stuff with Superman?
No, I think the whole idea of it is like it's an American dream thing, right? In that you take this powerful person, put them in a nurturing, caring environment, they grow up good. Like the whole point of Superman is that he's not inherently good. It's just that he landed in the right place at the right time to be given the good old fashioned American values.
Yeah.
And so it's always like a key part of that, of the character.
Yeah, I think the only pushback, I guess, on that would be that his dad, you know, Jor-El, is always depicted as a good Krypton also. Right. So I think, you know, in some
usually, ways, yeah, usually. Yeah.
So the mythology kind of, it squares, you know, it squares the circle. It says, yeah, it was the upbringing, but also, you know, his dad was also so nice. but you probably see as much darkness in Krypton as you do in modern America in Superman comics, probably on average.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Yeah, but I'm with James there. Like, there's probably some kind of alternate reality with Superman that he's less American, I think.
Well, Red Sun, for example.
No, I mean like an alternate reality of our actual time where that comic gets published in 1930s and he's and just his American identity is less part of him, but that's not our reality, you know, that he's a very American he's a very American character. And, you know, also you have the kind of American, you know, America as a, maybe not so much these days, but, you know, the immigrant story is a very American story. The American story is often an immigrant story. And Superman is that. And obviously you have, are both the creators, Siegel and Shuster, are they
Jewish? Yeah,
right. But also, aren't they sort of second generation or first generation, you know, Europeans that have fled the Nazis? Like they are from immigrant backgrounds that have come to America, and Superman, like, is that's them telling that kind of a story, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, the American bit of Superman is key, and the Kansas stuff. You know, I think yeah, Superman would be different if he landed in New York, and that's what some of the Batman Superman dynamic is kind of about, right? Yeah, which is why, again, the more I talk about this, it's the disappointment of this film in that you have there something that you can bounce off of, you know, you can make a point about, but the movie kind of doesn't. But yeah, it's key.
And so when there have been Superman stories that have taken that, you know, taken him and put them into other contexts, is Red Sun the... Is that the main example? Like, but I guess there are also, right, as you say, there's The Boys. I'm sure Mark Miller's written three of these. Like,
I'd say even more strong in The Red Sun. It's like it's Zod is Superman without America. You know, because that's Superman who stayed in Krypton or who went to the Phantom Zone. That's
But he was a wrong one to begin with, wasn't he?
Well, I guess.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, Red Sun is the one. Yes, which is still
what happens in Red Sun.
He lands in Russia during the Cold War, and so he becomes like the literal Soviet Superman.
He becomes David Harbour in Black Widow.
Yeah, yeah. It's less upbeat than that.
What about like the non Superman versions of the Superman story? I guess I am thinking about stuff like The Boys. I guess Invincible is a bit this as well, right?
To an extent.
I know Mark Miller's written at least one of them, right? It was and was what was the Jupiter thing that we watched? Is that
Jupiter's Legacy? Yeah.
which has had a real legacy. What I'm asking is, what are the interesting threads that are pulled on with the Superman story? Because I know a lot of the time, the main complaint that people have about Superman is, oh, he's boring because he's just a guy that has like the best of every power and he's kind of impossible to beat. And so as a superhero, he's not all that interesting. And I know we've kind of like address the counters to that on this podcast over the years, and it's not something I agree with, but I do think that's something that Brightburn does well, is kind of flip that and go, yeah, so he's kind of like the ultimate slasher movie bad guy that you're just like, oh, I'm fucked. Like the moment that he sets his sights on me, I'm fucked. And that's there's kind of some fun of watching that in a slasher movie context.
There is a little fun in seeing that. I mean, I think it's not an accident that his like sort of creepy mask that he wears is kind of a leather face from Texas Chainsaw. Like,
yeah, it's
I think it's deliberately echoing those things, and that in a way makes it fun.
Risa, is there anything you'd have there with like, yeah, what the interesting things to like pull on with the Superman story and you know. And why people are drawn to this? What if Superman was bad so often?
I'll give an offshoot comment on that, which is that there's you know, his electricity powers in Brightburn. I mean, there's a suggestion that he when he's around, electricity kind of goes on the fritz.
He has the flickering light superpower.
Yeah, and that isn't really a Superman power. And I did.
I wonder if that was for legal reasons. Give him something that's not Superman.
I wonder whether one of the fun bits that you could have gone to in this movie is you know, because he's not Superman, right? So you can have.
Is he though? Is he not Superman?
You brought the audience into that expectation with that as a power set, and like, what if? Hear me out. What if like? What if in the for the final kill, he turned into like a giant spider or something, or you know, like something very un-Superman happened.
genuinely, when I was rewatching it, I remember thinking like, does he have any non-Superman powers?
Mm.
Like I was thinking, oh, that might be an interesting way to upend expectations. Yeah. But they really do just go, we're going to do a beat for beat recreation of Superman, except like he is a psychopath.
But they just don't have enough fun with it. They just don't. They don't. You know, the super speed piece. They sort of barely use the flying, you know, gag at the end where he just basically flies her up and drops her like that. It's sort of, yeah. To your question, Joe, that's a nice. Horrible, you know, that's a real like, oh God, if you could fly, or if all you could do is fly, that you can cause so much violence in that way, right? You just pick somebody up, you fly them very high, they die, you know, horrible, let alone the laser eyes and the super strength and the super speed.
That sequence is really effective, I think, the final kill of Elizabeth Banks, because one, he has just shot her up through the roof of the barn. So she's
all messed up.
She's all fucked up already. And then she's high up in the sky where it's cold as fuck and there's no oxygen. Yeah. And then he drops her.
I thought when that sequence...
oh God, yeah. This like, even with that one simple power, there's so much opportunity for brutality.
I mean, I think if they were bold, they would have shown her hit the ground. You know, they do pull the punch. They don't show her body. I also wondered whether he was actually going so high up that we're going to almost get like an Event Horizon scene where like he's flown her into space and she, you know, like
just floats off into space.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, because there's, you know, the great Event Horizon scene where it's like, oh no, that actually, if your body was actually in space, your eyeballs would like, you know, your eyes would explode and your lungs would implode and your bones would snap. And it's like horrible, pretty fucking horrible. And I thought they might do something like that, but you know, again, they don't. But that's what I mean. They do pull punches a little bit with, you got the eye sequence, which is what I love about the eye moment is it's really shocking because it's kind of, it's so arbitrary, you know, that the glass smashes and she would get a glass in her eye. It's not how he means to kill her. It's just a random thing that happens. And then the way the camera dwells on that, it's really, I think that's the best moment in the whole movie. It's horrible.
It's a really nicely directed scene, it then cuts to her POV that is blurred and like soaked in blood.
Yes. Yeah.
More
of that. Yeah. More of that in the scenes. I think the badger sequence is, it just isn't quite interesting enough. The scene where he's stalking the girl and, you know, just could have done with a bit more. It just feels like, a director, what's the guy's name? Oh God, who directed Splice and some horror stuff?
Oh, Vincent
Natali, right?
Yes, Vincenzo Natali.
Yes, a guy like him, or I mean, obviously like a Cronenberg, or, you know, you could sort of see this premise in quote unquote real director's hands. And those kill sequences are just a whole nother level. Even if on the page they're the same, you know, the idea of the sequence is the same, but you know, directed wise, they're just so much more interesting. And
I'm trying to think in mainstream superhero movies, there's that brief flirtation with it in Fantastic Four,
the
Josh Trank version, which again, you know, there's the link back to Chronicle. But that was a, you know, very clearly an aspect of that movie that barely survived the truncated edit that we eventually saw. And then I did think there was something watching this that I was like, and especially talking to you guys about it now, that, you know, this is probably some of the stuff that Zack Snyder finds interesting, right? That he's kind of he's flirted with, and obviously he's shown evil Superman, and he shows a world that's afraid of Superman. But you know, in a way that's really difficult because we all know that Superman, we know what Superman as a piece of iconography is, and it's very difficult to see people's fear of him in that world. And also, you know, this isn't the kind of stuff that Snyder is able to depict in a, you know, in a major DC movie that stars Superman. But like, you know, I guess maybe in Snyder's head he's going, well, like, yeah, this guy could at any moment he wanted pick someone up and drop them. At any moment he could explode someone's head. At any moment he could do any number of one of these things. And I don't think Snyder ever really nailed the fear of that. And I also question whether that's the most interesting thing to do in a Superman movie. But as we say, I think there's a lot of potential for it, you know, in these kinds of projects. And as I said, there's so many of them that obviously, it's something that keeps drawing people back in to tell.
You're not going back far enough. Like Superman 3, right?
Yeah.
In a way, Superman 4. Like those are as early as any of this cinematic superheroes, we have been drawn to Superman, but bad. It's so obviously potent, and it makes you think about, you know, as power trips, as superhero stories, as power trips, and you kind of wonder, okay, yeah, I mean, I think I'd do right with a power set like this, but, you know, what if that guy at work, what if that guy at work who's a shit got these powers? Would he be evil? Like, you know, power corrupts and all that. It's potent, and yes.
And I guess it's not even just a Superman thing, is it? Because pretty much every superhero has the mirror image of them that they fight.
Venom.
Normally in their first movie.
I mean, the thing I find interesting about the idea of, like, the thing is, right, Dark, like, what if Superman but evil is one of the most, like, uninteresting ideas you can really go for? Because the thing that is interesting about Superman is that he has all this power and that he is good with it. Like, that's the interesting and aspirational thing, that he doesn't inspire fear, he inspires hope, like, all that stuff. And so doing the dark version of that, it's not really anything interesting to gain from that versus exploring the actual premise. This is one of the things that I think DC is really bad at, is taking, like, what's the core of the character, and how do we use it in a way that speaks to modern audiences, because modern audiences are primed to be suspicious and fearful. And, like, you see things like Star Trek, which can do the kind of hope wins, maybe things can get better narrative. So any evil version of Superman, I think, is inherently uninteresting. But it's such an easy thing to write because he does have all this power.
I think what makes this, you know, because this movie would be so boring if it was adult Superman and evil, right? You know, that's a version of this Superman but evil is that.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting little element you have here, and you could do it for other superheroes, is because you're not talking about, you know, you're not talking about the grown up version or the established version. You're talking about, what if we go back to the origin moment and we just add something into that twists it, and, you know, we dwell in that space. And again, I don't think this movie really does that enough, but that's, in a way, you know, there's, in a way, superheroes origin moments, I think, I know they're not actually under developed, but they're probably the Elseworldsy stuff is, you know, there aren't that many stories about Superman as a 12-year-old, right?
No, quite. Yeah.
Superboy, which is a character, that's more kind of late teen Superman. Or Clark Kent. We don't actually get this moment of Superman's story that often.
You certainly don't get it spun out into a full length story.
Yeah. So there's something in there, I think, and you could do the same for other characters.
For me, one of the interesting things is that, I mean, it's hard to say how much James Gunn was involved in this because, you know, he's just producer. But I think even if he was just there in an advisory capacity, the thing this movie can tell us is that James Gunn at least knows the ingredients of a Superman story and how to twist them. Yeah. So he doesn't have loving parents, and he doesn't have a, you know, generous society around him, and he doesn't, you know, get on with people. Like, these simple ideas that are like, well, what if we remove that element from Superman, what would happen? And the answer is he would turn evil. So in knowing that, you at least get the sense that, well, this guy, even as a guy just overseeing the movie, understands the elements of the character. And that, in a way, makes me hopeful for what he does when he actually makes his own Superman movie.
And I wonder whether, actually, the most interesting question that you would have to ask, and the most interesting root into a Superman origin story now, would be, what are the elements and what are the things that you would have to put around a modern day Superman to have him end up as this hero, this kind of bastion of society that can offer hope to everyone? And,
yeah.
And not be a political pawn, and not be someone who is kind of divisive across political lines.
I don't think you could do it now. It would be impossible.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe, but that's a huge challenge, isn't it? You know, if you want to set your movie in anything resembling a real America, a real Western society, then that's probably one of the big challenges you'd have to face into. And I would be, you know, super interested to see what kind of, like, tweaks creatively they would have to make to
to get him there without just hand waving and going, "It's Superman, don't worry about it."
You know? I think you could maybe do a really good story about, you know, the way in which the culture wars and the divisive political climate has made Superman impossible. Because that in itself would basically say, you know, if Superman couldn't exist in this world, then maybe we need to have a serious look at how to, you know, fix things. Because even someone fully benevolent with no ulterior motive couldn't function in the society that we are currently existing in. So maybe that's an interesting story in itself.
I suspect that the DC Superman movie that James Gunn's writing is not that story.
No.
is my gut. Although, thinking about what you guys are talking about, that, you know, the first 50 minutes of this, you do kind of go like, this could be the start of a Superman movie, you know? That Denham and Banks are like, yeah, this could be, you know, actually these guys could be a good Jonathan and Martha Kent.
until he takes him out into the forest to try and kill him.
Sure, but I think my point there is just that you know, James Gunn has made the correct first 10 minutes of a Superman movie once. Called Brightburn. He just shouldn't have them kill everybody after that.
For me, the part of the movie that rings least true is, like, I get that his mum is like protective and she's like, no, he is my child even though he's from space. Even though he's from space and he killed all those chickens, he is still my son. She persists with that.
Those chickens.
Yeah, right, he really does. He chokes them good.
It's not the only thing he's choking, the little freak.
Yeah, right. Little weirdo. But even after he's done some very bad stuff, including killing several of their own family members, she persists with that. And I think the bit where his dad takes him out into the forest to try and shoot him, you sort of get like, yeah, he would feel that responsibility and he would do that. The stupid thing there is in assuming that a bullet to the back of the head will actually work. Yeah. And I think it's a really good beat when it doesn't. And he realizes he's fucked, and the kid realizes he's been like fully betrayed by his own parent. I just wish that Elizabeth Banks' character had come around a little bit quicker.
Well, you almost say like he needs to come around, he needs to be less sure less quickly, and she needs to be less closed off to the idea a little bit. So, I mean, the moment when they pull out the porn with the with the guts, yeah, I was like, come on, guys.
Yeah, where they're like, oh, some weird jerk-off material. I'm like, no, that's fully viscera. That is that is not weird jerk-off material. And she's like, is this a boy thing or something? You're like, absolutely not.
In pictures of like, you know, like, photography of like surgery.
Hey, when he heard the phrase, up in them guts, he just took it differently.
Oh, no, James has been cancelled. I think we've done Brightburn, guys. Do you think we've done Brightburn?
Yeah, it's fair to say it's not an especially deep movie. I think it's a fun watch for superhero fans. Like, I've seen it twice now, and I can imagine maybe going back to it another time.
I didn't dislike it. I thought it. I agree with Reese that I don't think it fulfilled its potential, and you know, and I do think it's got a pretty ropey script, but. It's creepy. It's got some effective creepy kids killing people mercilessly. It works on that front.
Yeah, so, I do. Yeah. And also, every time Feige's like, oh well, the Doctor Strange: The Multiverse of Madness, it's a horror film, and you watch it, and you go, no, it's not. This, you know, there aren't that many films, you know, because this film is absolutely in the superhero genre, I would say. But there are not that many films within the genre that are truly, and you know, another end of the spectrum on another genre. And this is, you know, and again, this came out, you know, now 4 years ago. There's sort of, not sure there's anything really equivalent in the last 4 years to this. and we ought to, you know, if the genre is to continue to survive, if that's what we want, but if that is what we want, more of this, more, you know, this remind, in talking, I was reminded of the, what's it called? The Trench, the James Wan, like Aquaman spin-off thing that they talked about.
Yeah,
only going to be a horror film.
What a missed opportunity that was.
Right, you know, more shit like that has got to be the way forward. Even if some of it is a disappointment, like this, like for me this was, or just a bit poor. You know, there's got to be the Marvel movie, quote unquote, and what everyone now knows that really is for the genre to continue. You know, the genre has to find other types of movies outside of that, and Brightburn is that. It definitely is that.
I agree. I just want to make two quick points. One is that the stuff at the end with Michael Rooker is quite good fun.
Yeah.
And did you guys notice? I only say this because I read it in the Wikipedia, but one of those little pictures is the guy from Super, from James Gunn's other film.
Yeah, yeah, I did notice that, yeah.
Which I guess is like a Batman riff, basically, right? That what Super is?
I have watched Super, it's a long time. I just remember him, he says, shut up, crime.
Well, maybe not. Maybe it's more of another Superman riff, right?
I don't know. It's like the idea is it's like, I don't, maybe it's like Punisher. It's like a street level guy who's just it's like Kick-Ass. It's like a guy who's like,
I just, it was more Kick-Ass. Yeah. I had a second point and I've forgotten it now. Doesn't matter
for me.
Michael Rooker was fun, and
I liked the shitty sheriff who like
gets wiped out as soon as he arrives at the house.
Who had the right idea? Oh,
you reminded me what I was going to say. What I was going to say is this would be a good movie to get like three or four friends together and watch in your own MST3K format.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is a lot of fun stuff happening in this movie. The sheriff exploding is definitely one of it, where he finally turns up to help and then is immediately like turned into mist.
Yes. I watched it with my housemate and I kept on from the Badger scene, like when he flips the car and he's clearly got his jaw. I kept on saying like, no, he's fine. He's going to shake that off. He's going to be absolutely again when the dad gets his like head lasered away. I'm like, yeah, it's all right. He's going to just, you know, a couple of paracetamols. You know,
this is definitely a good bad movie.
yes.
Okay. I'm gonna assume that James is not gonna remember his extra point.
No, so that was it.
Oh.
It's a good bad movie. Watch it with several friends.
Oh, okay. I'm a bit disappointed in your second point.
I was gonna do it first, but I forgot it.
I like the bit when he crunches her hand, that's kinda gnarly. Again, I like the two sheriffs and how fucking inept they both are, because they're kind of inept before they get killed. They seem inept before that. I quite enjoyed that. I liked his weird logo. If I'm just rushing through this,
I was hoping that he was gonna be like, oh yeah, on my planet it stands for hope.
Yeah, that'd be great. And the name as well, like the sort of the nakedly Clark Kent riff on his name.
But then the weird flash forward to watching this in 2023, and the weird, like at one point someone literally says, "Brandon, let's go, Brandon." But also kind of fits. That was odd.
Have you guys seen MacGruber? I'm guessing you probably have.
The movie, yeah.
Yes. I don't know if you guys, but when she's flicking through his notebook, I don't know if you guys got you thought about the MacGruber scene when he's LS72103 and the number plate. Anyway, the notebook shit is great. Like, it's so
he's drawn all of his crimes in detail.
It's so weird. It's hilarious. I'm sorry, it was. That was quite fun. The bit when he goes out, like the kind of quote unquote origin story of his cape. There's that one bit where he's going out to fly to the girl, and he just takes like a little rug with him, and I guess that's the cape he then wears. That was fun. You know, unexplained, random.
just quickly, actually, you reminded me of something else, which is that the whole way through this movie, I kept expecting them, like, I kept thinking, has anyone in this movie seen Superman? Because what it really needs is a character to turn up and be like, oh, fuck, you've got an evil Superman on your hands. Like, oh, Jesus, have you seen any green rocks lying around? We need some of those rocks. But
I'm very glad they didn't. I hate when that happens. Hey, this is kind of like that thing. It's Ocean's 12.
One quick point, based on what you just said, James. I think the production design on the... Well, I'll make a good point, bad point. The production design on the capsule, I think, is really well done. It like looks really, really menacing and scary, even though it also looks like the Superman capsule. I think that's just a really well done bit of production design. On the counterpoint, I think the score is, you know, maybe at the very beginning you've got those riffs on Superman stuff, but by the end it's so generic, so just nothing. And actually, talking to my housemate, you could have done something where you start with a Superman type theme, and then you really kind of corrupt that, and then that's your villain theme.
It just
doesn't do that. The most
this movie has a lot of the Inception horns towards the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's just the most basic ass, you know, jump scary slasher movie stuff, which was a shame.
Okay, we're done.
We're sure we're not getting more points. We should maybe we could have stretched this out to another hour. I feel like once I ended the podcast, we got some gold.
Well, we didn't really go through the story, so there's like little random good. Things that's written anyway. But I don't wish it, to. But
it becomes evil Superman. He kills some people, and then it ends.
I can give you Mike. Can I just run through quickly my seven? I made seven short points.
Oh yeah, go for it.
We've talked about all of these already, but I'll give you the seven. And I said to the listeners, I said to the James and Joe before that, point five, I make about 10 minutes into the movie, and then nothing until the very end of the movie. Point one, what if Superman landed in modern Kansas? Sure. Point two, does this tell us anything about Gun DC really? ? Point three, would watch a Brightburn take on other heroes? Point four, why the eye stuff with about six? And then this is the fifth point, which is nothing for another hour. Oh, it's a slasher.
And then really checked out psychologically, yeah.
Point six, which I think I make towards the end when I'm wrapping up. Point six is all boring after that, which, you know, I will hold to. And then the final point, point seven, the credit song, of course, was Billie Eilish, Bad Guy.
Oh, I hated that. I mean,
credit song, best bit of movie.
Although, I've got to be honest, I think in 2019 I didn't know that Billie Eilish existed. Fair play to Brightburn there, I guess.
It probably cost a lot less as well to get that song in 2019.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know it the first time I saw the song, because when I saw it this time I was like, that is hilarious. I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
I like the idea of like the fox and all the animals from the actual movie The Bad Guys, which use that song in as the
I was going to say that film uses it, doesn't it?
Yes. Okay, I am now officially done with talking about Brightburn.
Okay. Reese, you've inspired a pitch, though.
Okay.
Old school, okay.
Pitch me Brightburn for a different superhero.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got two, in fact, right off the dump.
You start then, because I don't yet.
Well, The Fly. And it,
okay.
It's just that movie, but you call it Spider-Man. Because that is the Spider-Man but evil riff. That just is. They made it. It's
a yeah, right.
And then I think this movie doesn't exist so much, but you know, I honestly think you could do a Batman. You know, again, orphan son of a billionaire, but you know, it's Elon Musk's son. You know, he dies and he becomes some some crazy vigilante who's got some strange vengeance completely, adopted from his own father's craziness, and has all the resources to do whatever he wants in that vigilante path. I think that's Thomas Wayne was a nice doctor. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, What does that look like in our modern society? There's something there, I think, that could be fun. And all the weird gadgets, you know, think about like Batman's gadgets, but done in a Brightburn way. You know, what if your jammers, you know, what if you throw a batarang at like a guy's eye? What if you stab a guy and then you shoot a batarang up and I don't know, you put his guts out. I don't know, you could do some shit with Batman's gadgets. That would be horrid. I guess those would be my two.
My Brightburn take on a character would be the Joker. And what I would do is I would have a movie where someone is slowly kind of driven mad by society because everything goes wrong for him. And actually, rather than becoming a serial killer, he becomes a nice clown and he finds the good humor in everything that happens in life. And he says, you know, even though bad stuff happens, we can still have a smile and a dance down some stairs about it.
I like it. So he's like a Mr. Blobby. That's how he ends up.
Yeah, it's like the inverse of Joaquin Phoenix Joker.
Listen, this is easy for me. I think you both win and it's a cinematic universe.
Hell yeah. ECU.
Evil Batman and good Joker. That's probably been done.
That's good. Yeah, I think Mark Miller's written that comic like 50. Yeah,
if he hasn't, he's going to be writing it tomorrow.
So I've looked it up on IMDb. This is the first use of the song Bad Guy in a movie. Yeah.
First of.
Well, then it was used in, so this includes TV shows as well, but FBI, Sweet Diva, Love Island, a TV miniseries of Four Weddings and a Funeral that exists, apparently. Shine, don't know what that is. The Hit List. The Umbrella Academy, Bridgerton, The Masked Singer, The Guide to the Perfect Family, Sing 2, apparently. What else? Euphoria, Westworld. Yeah, but it doesn't have the bad guys listed here, so that's...
I'm going to write a song called Heroic Protagonist.
I tell you, you can say a lot of things about Billie Eilish, but I tell you what, she's not a sellout. I tell you that much.
So yeah, fair play to Brightburn for getting to that one early.
Do you think we'll see a Brightburn 2?
No.
Nah, I think if it had made double the money it did, it might have. The budget was 6 to 12 and it made 32. So it did okay. But if it had done 60, I reckon, yeah, we would have had 8 Brightburn movies.
We never got a second Chronicle, though, and that felt like a slam dunk at the time.
You know who I think would fit? Let me pitch you something. You want to talk about a pitch? Let me pitch you this. Brightburn 2, Dawn of Evil. It's Brightburn versus Mithrigan. There you go. There's a fucking movie for you.
Have you seen Mithrigan?
I've seen Mithrigan. It's good.
Is it good? I mean, it looks like it was created entirely for the memes, but
what's weird? Because what I think is good about Mithrigan is it's... I'm going to keep calling it that. Is like satire is... I mean, it's...
Megan, for anyone who hasn't figured it out.
Megan. The satire is so on the nose, so on the surface, but that does kind of make the movie more fun and more interesting. And I think, I actually think if the Mithrigan, you know, filmmakers put their eyes to this project, to this premise, you have a much better film. And I'd be more, you know, I'd think that's a better result. But yeah, fuck it. Mithrigan versus Brightburn. Let's do it.
Deal. I'm looking forward to seeing Mithrigan eventually.
It's really funny. It's a comedy. It's a comedy is what it is.
The clip of Drew Barrymore being Mithrigan whilst interviewing Alison Williams to be upsetting. So I can only imagine what the film is like. Okay, so that was this week's episode. I guess we will be back within a few weeks because Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is showing up in cinemas. So that will be our next episode, unless a Disney Plus series kind of sneaks up on us, but we've not got any announced dates for those, even if
you guys Did you guys know that Jonathan Majors is in that movie? I feel like that's not part of the marketing at all, and they're staying very quiet about that fact.
Listen, if all of the promotional blitz around that has just got me worried for the levels of sexiness. Horny Joe's radar is already going off.
It feels like it's a Kang movie, and I think that's awesome. But I'm like, is Ant-Man going to be in this?
Well, is Ant-Man going to get killed in this?
Nah.
What do you?
I'm saying yes.
No chance. What? No chance.
Saying yes, but not Scott Lang.
Okay, I'm back on board.
Wait, which one do you want to die? Douglas or his daughter?
Michael Douglas.
He does, yeah. I don't want him to die. I just...
They fake out killed him before.
Okay, then who's going to die? David Dunn.
No, Ant-Man's
going to
die.
He's not even in this movie.
Get out of here!
They've removed the comic relief.
Yeah.
Like, I'm ending this podcast. Listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back with some Ant-Man in a couple of weeks. Goodbye!
Bye.
Goodbye, podcast!